Okay, dear Venerable Sister, dear Dhamma friends, we have come to the second Dhamma sermon of this English medium retreat. May you give your consent by saying Sadhu Sadhu. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස චතුරාදිත්තානෝ අයම් බික්කු පුරිසෝති. Dear Dhamma friends, as you all know that we are doing some sort of a sutta anugrahita, we are through the knowledge of the Buddha's teaching, we are trying to support our practice. So this is actually very important. Otherwise, we may practice in our own ways and we may explore in various different routes, which sometimes cause us to waste time. So if we know the exact path, if we know the correct path, if we know the correct teaching what Buddha has taught, then it's quite easy to confidently travel in that path. So therefore, Sutta Anugrahita, time to time listening to Dhamma, reading certain books, are quite useful. So keeping that in mind, so we have taken a particular sutta to discuss in this series of retreats, and that sutta is available in Majjhima Nikaya. The name of the sutta is called Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, where Buddha explains very deeply to one particular venerable who actually don't know who is the Buddha, but Buddha happened to meet him. And then without introducing himself, he preaches Dhamma, so that through the understanding of Dhamma, this Venerable Pukkusati learned to understand that he is the teacher. It's a very beautiful way of putting the message or passing the message, rather than immediately telling I am so and so, rather allow the other person to understand what is the teaching, what is the truth. And then the kind of a development happens in oneself, understanding happens in oneself, and that understanding helps to properly recognize the teacher, properly recognize what is Dhamma, properly recognize who is Sangha, and properly recognize or appreciate one's sila. So this understanding is quite important. So taking that approach, so Buddha explains Dhamma, teaching Dhamma to Venerable Pukkusati. So it is a very gradual, step-by-step discourse where Buddha tells that so-called being, so-called person, is six types of elements. So we discuss to some extent through this series of Dhamma sermons. So even though we claim I am so and so, I am a monk, I am a man, I am a woman, I am a lay person, I am a teacher, I am a doctor, I am an engineer, like that, even though we claim ourselves, so ultimately we can understand these bodies are made up with four elements. Similarly, the outside, the physical world, is made up with four elements. So this understanding helps to overcome fair amount of difficulties, fair amount of defilements, because when we attribute some importance to ourselves, so we start to think in a different way. We start to think or look down the others, or some sort of a misbehavior can happen when we have wrong understanding. But more and more we understand that this body is containing nothing but four elements, externally is also just four elements, then this ajjata bahidda, internal external difference, becomes diminish, reduce, and ultimately disappear. So Buddha says, Yacha ajjattika patavidhatu, yacha bahira patavidhatu, patavidhatu revesa. Whatever the earth element in the internal, whatever the external earth element, it is merely the earth element. Similarly, he tells it's the, merely the water element, merely the air element, merely the heat element. So similarly, you can see, if you can understand the whole experience through elements, so your mind is going some deeper states, deeper understandings, where you can simply neglect that the typical conventional states, but rather can acknowledge that this body is nothing but four elements. What is external available is also four elements. So there is no way of finding a person there. So likewise, this Dhatu Manasikara, the type of the four element meditation, therefore is particularly arousing the wisdom. And therefore, Buddha is explaining that to Venerable Pukkusati. Beautifully in this sutta, the so-called person is explained not only by four elements, but by six elements, where Buddha has taken into account the space element, and the mental side is taken as a consciousness element. So we have discussed these things in detail. So particularly two types of meditation objects are explained in this sutta. One is the Dhatu Manasikara, where you do some contemplation on elements. And the other one, in order to understand the function of the consciousness, Buddha explains about the Vedana Anupassana, where the one primary function of consciousness is to understand now there is a painful feeling, now there is a happy feeling, now there is an equanimous feeling. So likewise, this clearly understanding or distinctly understanding what type of feeling available at the present moment is one important function of the consciousness. So therefore, Buddha explains the consciousness in terms of this function, where at a given time, one can understand, okay, now the body is going through some painful feeling. Now the body is going through some happy feeling, some pleasure. Or the mind is going through some pleasurable feeling. So likewise, at any given moment, one can understand there's some sort of a feeling arise. So feeling is there. So understanding what type of feeling is a function of the consciousness. So we discuss these things to some extent. And then further Buddha explained in another way, okay, to some people, rather than going through elements, it is easy to understand when we are telling that the so-called person is nothing but six bases of contact, where you have eye contact, where eye meets with the form, visible form, and then the eye contact arises. Similarly, ear meets with sound, then the ear contact arises. Then nose contacts the smell, then the nose contact arises. Tongue meets with taste, then the tongue contact arises. Body meets with some tactile sensation, the body contact, body consciousness arises. And again, the mind contacts with the mental object, then the mind contact arises. So this is another way of looking at the process. We are, even though we call I am so and so, what is really happening is that this whoever the being has six types of contacts. We would say certain six types of sensors are there. So when eye sensor is operating, the eye contact arises. When ear sensor is operating, ear contact arises. When the nose sensor is operating, the nose contact arises. Likewise, you can see the whole body and the mind are type of sensors. So the contact is there. Due to contact, the various other things are there. The defilements can arise. We can take for long journey. But at the very origin level, very root level, what we have is this sort of a contact. So Buddha explains in that way as well. And then giving more emphasis to the mental side, Buddha says, when you see a visible object, so our mind is looking for some sort of pleasure in it. So mind is searching certain signs in order to get more and more happy feelings there, more and more happiness there. So mind starts to wander, starts to associate that particular visible object in order to gain some happiness. Similarly, suppose you saw someone who don't like, then you even like to see little more in order to arise some kind of unhappiness. It might happen unknowingly. Yeah, you are looking at some features or some signs where the anger is arising. So mind associate those features. So likewise, we can the mind is doing it to the visible object, the sounds, the taste, the tactile sensations, likewise, the, all the sensory phenomena, sensory objects, we are now associating in order to looking for some happiness or for some sort of a resentment or even for some equanimity. So that way also Buddha is explaining who is this person. And then Buddha is taking some deeper explanation. It is more into a kind of a practitioner, where Buddha is telling this so-called person is four foundations. So that is what we are explaining right now. So Buddha is telling, now so-called person is some sort of a four foundations. What are the four foundations? First foundation is the Paññādiṭṭhāno. The wisdom foundation is there. Then Saccādiṭṭhāno, the foundation of truth is there. Then Chāgādiṭṭhāno, foundation of relinquishment is there. Then Upasamādiṭṭhāno, the foundation of peace is there. So this is a kind of a fairly advanced state where one is in practice, particularly in the wisdom side, and there he does not neglect the wisdom. So therefore, in the Paññādiṭṭhāno, where the foundation of wisdom, Buddha says one should not neglect wisdom, rather one has to give due prominence to wisdom. So that is where Buddha further explaining the different elements, six elements. So when one understand the whole experience through elements, the wisdom develops. Rather than conventionally grasping various mind-made concepts, when you are through wisdom, with some very refined wisdom, when you are understanding things through elements, then the wisdom develops. So rather than neglecting wisdom, so we have to cultivate wisdom. We have to arise, we have to arouse wisdom, we have to develop wisdom. So therefore it is said, Paññaṃ nappamajjeya, one should not neglect wisdom. So our practice, particularly the vipassana practice, is fairly based on this. So vipassana practice is sometimes called as wisdom practice, where more prominence is given to development of the wisdom. So it is it may not happen immediately, and this wisdom is not the typical book knowledge that we are gaining through listening, reading, like that, and even through mental contemplation and all these things is another type of knowledge. But this wisdom happens through some sort of observation, where you have fair amount of already build up concentration, so that you can maintain your attention at a given object, given phenomena, and that observation you are continuing for a considerable period of time. So it's a kind of an unbiased observation. You are not doing any kind of a judgment there, and you are keeping yourself as much as in a neutral state and allow the phenomena to happen as it like. So you allow things to happen and you simply observe. Say for example, you are observing how elements are operating, how they are behaving. You are simply observing how feelings are behaving. You are observing how the mind is behaving, how it is operating. So likewise, you are doing very sort of a neutral observation. So this neutral observation, this silent observation, will lead to this kind of a wisdom. So this wisdom is something that Buddha tells that one has to give due prominence, one has to develop. And this is not the end either. And then Buddha says, Saccādiṭṭhāno, this is in a way, is a kind of a, one reaches to some state, so where due to this wisdom development, one's mind is coming to some sort of a state where mind is not interested about these changing phenomena, rather it likes to be free from those changing phenomena. That is what we explained yesterday, where suppose one is observing feelings for, say, a long time. Now he is observing feelings. There are happy feelings arising, painful feeling arising, neutral feeling arising. Again and again, one is able to observe these things. One is maintaining some equanimity in the mind and again observing. So due to this observation, he gets some understanding. Now I have no control on which feeling might arise in the next given moment. It is entirely sort of a dependently arisen process. So I have very less control on this newly born feeling. It can arise due to various contact. When causes or when kind of contact is there, which is causing, which is conducive for the origin of happy feeling, then the happy feeling arises. When certain contact is there for the origin of painful feeling, the painful feeling arises. When certain category of contact is there for the origin of neutral feeling, the neutral feeling arises. Passa paccaya vedana. So one understands there's a beautiful relationship between this contact and the feeling. Due to contact, due to the respective contact, the corresponding feeling arises. So this process, you have very less control. So you more and more one understand. More and more one understand the dependent origination, dependently arisen nature. And nothing exists by its own till the causes last, the condition or the result last. So likewise, you will understand things are happening due to certain preparations, certain causes, and these causes are out of your control. And since they are fully dependent on various causes, the result is extremely vulnerable. You can't maintain that. You can't find lasting happiness through them. So we'll understand the unsatisfactory nature. And again, whatever arisen is constantly changing, rapidly changing, and you can't stop it. Immediately when they are arising, it is constantly going to its passing away. Again arising, constantly going to its passing away. And you have no control out in that process. So likewise, one will understand that impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and the non-self nature. More and more one understand that, then the observer, yogi, become dispassionate about this process. It may be feelings, it may be different elements, it may be even the mind processes. So you are observing the mind, and even in the mind you can feel sometimes happy, some kind of pleasurable thoughts may be arising, desire arising, maybe hatred arising, sometimes get entangled, sometimes jealousy arising due to certain causes. When such causes are there, the respecting mental states are arising. And how long these mental states last, depending on whether you are feeding it or whether you are simply moving away from that. And when you are really moving away from that, then they are taking their own cycle, own lifespan. And this lifespan is entirely out of your control. So you can see even the watching of mind can lead to some sort of dispassion. So likewise, whenever you do kayanupassana, vedananupassana, chittanupassana, dhammanupassana, whatever all these observations ultimately lead to dispassion. When again and again dispassion arises, more and more dispassion arises, at a given moment, the mind is utterly disinterested of this process and it will relinquish. And then it is released. Then the mind becomes independent from this conditioned phenomena and it comes to some sort of unconditioned nature, independent nature, undefiled nature, objectless nature. So that is where Buddha is telling Saccha Adhitthano. And there Buddha is saying Sacchang Anurakheya. One has to preserve that truth. When something is changing, when something is constantly coming to something different, you can't find some sort of a stability there. But this state, not being dependent on anything, you can find some sort of a peace there. And you can depend on that. You can find it, you can use it as a refuge. So therefore Buddha is telling, Sacchang Anurakheya. So you have to preserve this truth. momentarily one may be observing this, one may be experiencing this, and again you are now developing that state. By further observing the phenomena, your mind become disinterested of that. Again, mind get released and come back to this released state. Again and again, you are observing changing phenomena. Again, mind become dispassionate about it. Come back to this peaceful state. So likewise, more and more one will come into this peaceful state. And now one becomes familiarizing with this peaceful state. And one tries to expand that period. 1 minute, 2 minute, 3 minute, 5 minute, 15 minutes, 30 minutes, like that. So one is now trying to establish on that peaceful state, because that is fairly stable, because it is not dependent on very other causes. It has its own nature. It is unconditioned. So this becomes one's, in a fairly advanced state, this becomes one's home. The mind's home. There are certain verses in the Dhammapada. Deepam kairata medhavi yang ogho nabikirati. Where Buddha says, the wise person develops some sort of a island, kind of an oasis, where the defilements are not going to affect. Defilements are not going to pollute. And this, there's a kind of a, this unpolluted, undefiled state of mind. And one is trying to again and again experience such undefiled state of mind. And one tries to abide by that. Becomes one's home. More and more one's staying there without associating anything. So again and again, Buddha encourages to live in that state, reiterating that phrase in Satipatthana Sutta, Anissitocha viharati nachakinchi loke upadhyati. One may live independently without associating anything, without leaning onto anything. And if the mind habitually go and grasp something, then one has to release from that state. Say for example, mind stays for some time, this unattached, released, free, sort of undefiled state. But due to the habit, mind goes and grasps something. Then the mindfulness show, now mind has grown and grasped something. Then immediately the wisdom come and release the mind. So mind will return back to this undefiled state. Yani sotani lokasming satitesang nivaranang. Sotanam sangvaram bhumi panyayete pitiyare. So Buddha says, whatever the flaws of defilements are there in the world, mindfulness is the restraint. But the complete purification happens through wisdom. So mindfulness will tell you, now mind has gone and grasped. Again mind has gone and attached. Once the mindfulness has shown that, so we have to apply wisdom, and then the mind become again released. So when one develops this state, then Buddha comes to the next state. Rather, next stage, he is explaining Chaga Dittano. This is another state, very beautiful state, where he tells Chaga Manubruheya. One should cultivate this relinquishment. So what is this chaga, and what is this relinquishment, and what we have to relinquish? So that is a very interesting question. So actually Buddha explained this in related with the upadhi. Upadhi is a term used in Dhamma to indicate possessions. So as human beings, we have many possessions. So you have your possessions. You have a house, you have a car, you may have a wife, you may have a husband, you may have children, you have relations, you have your occupation, you have your designation, you have degrees, you have social status. So many things we can claim. So many possessions are there today. can you understand that all these are used to create I? So we are creating I based on all these possessions. So you are creating a personality out of all these things. So when you are, say for example, we are going to your working place, and there you have to behave according to the given designation. Suppose you are given a designation as a CEO, so you have to behave, you have to become a CEO. Suppose someone simply neglects your order, so you are going to suffer because you are the boss. You can't work as a peon there because you are a CEO. And you claim that CEO position there. So you are attached to that position. Suppose you are a very wealthy person and you are going to the market, and the other people couldn't recognize you. Suppose they are treating you as a poor person. So you get hurt because you are possessing or you are claiming yourself as a very rich person. Suppose you are a well-educated person claiming a lot of degrees. At any given time, suppose whatever the instruction that you have given or whatever the idea that you have given is neglected. So you're going to suffer because you possess that, the education, possess that, say, the intellectual properties. Now we have intellectual rights and all sort of things. So we are claiming that. Say you are claiming house. You have a house. So someone is going to come and you their own claims, maybe wrong claims, fraud claims, and now you have to fight because you are possessing house. So you have a car and you are driving that, and someone is hitting the car and your car being hurt, and more than the car, you being hurt. So likewise, more and more possessions you have, more and more you have to look after. So you have children, so you have to look after your children. So if they behave bad, so you are going to suffer. So you are the parent, so you have to be responsible for them. So if the teacher, the school teacher is sort of accusing, okay, your child didn't do well in the exam, then you are going to have some kind of irritation in the mind. Why he didn't do that? I am spending so much of money for him. He should have done like this. So I am going to suffer. Suppose you are possessing a spouse. So if the spouse is not behaving as you like, you are going to suffer. Say you have some sort of social status. If you couldn't maintain that, again you are going to suffer. More than that, so now these are things that we can understand. How about the body? So we all have a body, and this is my body, and it is very beautiful. I am very tall, I am very thin, I am fair. So we all claim certain characteristics related to the body. So someone is simply hinting based on some kind of a defect in the body. So I am going to suffer. Say if you are very fat and someone is simply hinting you are too fat. So you are very, very, too heavy now. So likewise, you can use various terms. So you are going to suffer because you claim, you possess, you identify with the body. Similarly, say you have various perceptions, you have various kind of way of looking at things. If someone is attacking that way of thinking, that way of perception, then again you are going to suffer. And you have certain creativity and certain creations are there which you have made. If someone else has made something better than that, you might feel jealous about him, or you might like to attack him, or like that, many things are there. So these aggregates are also creating some sort of self, and we are identifying with these aggregates. So can you all accept that we are carrying some sort of burden because of these claims? So we are carrying a huge burden because I am so and so. I have these things. I have to look after these things. So I am always thinking about something. Maybe about my parents. Maybe about my children. Maybe about my possessions. Maybe about my house. maybe about the social status, maybe my fame, maybe the earned money. So we always have something to worry. So if you have nothing, then it's also difficult. But if you have nothing, then nothing to worry. But unfortunately, we have many things. And again, we are acquiring things. The more we have money, so we are spending more and more money to acquire things. So that's why the typical lay life is considered as rich based on how much you have acquired, how much luxurious things you have in your house, how many floors are there in your house, how many cars are there in your garage. So likewise, so more and more you have, and you think that we are rich, but more and more burden is there for the mind. How about simple way of living? Say for example, in good old days, we don't have this much of possessions. Say we have, say, paddy fields. Say you are a farmer, simply going to the paddy field, and you are simply doing some work there, and your wife may come in the during the lunchtime with some ambula, and you are eating that, then return back to the house in the evening and spend some time with your kids. In a way, fairly simple way of life. But nowadays, so while you are going, you get a call. So immediately you have to attend to some other work. So while you are in the train, so another person come and say, tried something. And while you are driving, someone cuts off. Then you get angry. So while you are working, again, another SMS. Another thing you have to attend. So even while in the toilet, you are not free. So much attached. So much complicated life. Actually, the modern life is fairly complicated. So our mind has become fairly complicated. So many engagements. Always have the sensors to various areas, so we don't know which area going to trigger. Either some bell rings, or some visible object comes to the front, or smell comes, or taste comes, like that. So there are many ways that you get upset. So therefore, in Dhamma says, Yankinchi dukkhaṁ sambhoti, sabbang upadi paccaya. So whatever the suffering arise, it is due to acquisitions. Upadi nidana pabhavanti dukkha yekechi lokasmin aneka rupa. Because of these acquisitions, there are these various sorts of suffering, various sorts of stress arise in the world. Yoche avidva upadin karoti punappunang dukkham upeti mandu. So the ignorant person, not knowing this, is again and again create more and more acquisitions and become more and more suffered, become more and more stressful. If we fairly honestly consider our life and say life before 200 years, so those our ancestors have lived very fairly stress-free life than ourselves. Even though we claim that we are in a very modern age, very high in technology, advanced in technology, but if we consider the stress of the mind, it has developed. Defilements have developed. Stress has developed. And even the lifespan has reduced. When compared to the old age, I mean, when compared to the old era, and those people, I mean, you can remember your grandfather, your great-grandfather might have lived, say, 100 years, 120 years. How about you? Don't know. Very unlikely. Because so many things are there. Because stress is creating a lot of impact on the health. So, because mental health is definitely affecting the body health. And if you are mentally constantly suffer, constantly there's a stress being built up in the mentality, then it's definitely going to have a great impact on the body. So we have, I think, so many psychosomatic diseases nowadays. So they are more than that. So what Buddha says is, Tasmahi janam upadin na kaira dukkhassa jati pabhavanu passi. So if one understand why and how and when this suffering arises, he will understand this suffering arising when you have some sort of acquisition. Say for example, now you are simply sitting. At that time, suppose kind of a mosquito coming and hitting you, kind of biting. And if you think of malaria, if you think of dengue, then you are going to suffer. Because you have so much attachment to the body. And you simply understand how this suffering arises. Mosquito is biting, doesn't matter. And little pain is there. So what the kind of mental agitation, too much suffering arises because some sort of fear is there for the body. Now there's a dengue fever spreading. So you are very alert on that. Fairly afraid of that. And you are going to suffer fairly more than that. More than the bite, you suffer. Similarly, say for example, you are, say, get some letter. And you still didn't open. Suppose it may be from your boss or whoever the hire to you. And you might have some kind of a attack with him. So you don't know what is there in the letter. So you are having some sort of a suffering. Because you are having sort of designation, having sort of status attributed to yourself, and you want to have it, you want to maintain it. And if it is going to face to some sort of threat, you are going to suffer. So again and again, if you are observing the stress being built up, how this suffering is originating, definitely we can find out there is some sort of a link towards where we claim. There's a link towards what we possess, what we acquire. So therefore Buddha says, Tasmahi janam upadin na kaira. So if you know that the fair amount of suffering is arising when I am carrying some sort of mental baggage, kind of mental burden. So if you can maintain a mind free from burden, free from these kind of mental acquisitions, then even though you have house, your spouse, and say children, or office work, or whatever thing, we can have some sort of peace of mind because you are not carrying that baggage constantly in the mind. Because it is obviously we can't simply disclaim everything, relinquish everything, and we can't become monks. So that is possible. Even today, monks have so many things. So, but what we have to do is, basically, we may possess various things, but can we maintain some sort of detachment towards them without carrying them as a burden in the mind? So we understand that everything is subject to change. Even though you do your best, things are going to change. Even though you take care of your body, it is subject to disease, it's subject to death. So you have only very little control. So likewise, if you have this kind of a detachment towards things, towards the possessions, then they may provide you less burden. They become less burden to you, even though you have so many acquisitions. Actually, you will then reduce your acquisitions only to the amount what is essential. Rather than acquiring so many things, you will find out so many things are not necessary. What is necessary is only very limited things, and they may not create so much of suffering, so much of burden, so much of a stress. But if you are having so many acquisitions, which is not necessary really, and they may create a lot of suffering. And more you become, say, aware of this process, how the mental stress arising, how the suffering arise, and you simply release those unnecessary acquisitions. You simply let them go. And you are now like to maintain some sort of a freedom of the mind. And you value that freedom of mind than having so many acquisitions. Because you give more prominence to the mental culture or mental health than having so many things. Because physical things are constantly changing and you have less control, and again so many others are in search of that. And if you understand that I don't need so many cars, for example, it is enough to have one car, and you are using that and you are happy with that, and you are simply, suppose you had several cars and you are simply selling the others and you are simply maintaining just one. So you have simply one car and one burden now. So likewise, you can understand what is essential and what is not really essential. And there's a very beautiful statement by Achan Chah. He says, if you relinquish less, you have less happiness. If you relinquish more, you have more happiness. If you relinquish all, you have complete happiness. Simple as that. So there's a beautiful incident happened during the Buddha's time. So with time, so Buddha and the Sangha become very popular among the lay people. Now kings came to the front and they are offering so many things, and the many wealthy merchants are very happy about the Buddha and the Sangha. They are offering so many things. They are preparing so many, say, monasteries and giving good, say, food and all. So the Buddha and the Sangha become very famous. So what happened is, the other ascetics are there and they become little jealous about it. They can't handle it because now they are losing their possessions. They are losing their fame. They are not well supported now. So what they did was, so they wait till the Buddha and the Sangha come into certain villages, and while they are on Pindapatha, they start to abuse them. They start to use filthy words and start to blame them. So the Sangha become really, you know, the monks become really upset about it. They get hurt. And then they come and complain the Buddha, telling Bante, now we can't stand this. Now we are well accepted, well, very, really popular among the laity. Now they are really supporting us, but this is not, the other ascetics are fairly jealous of us. Now they are doing this kind of a thing. They are blaming us, they are using filthy words, abusing us like that. So they are complaining to the Buddha. You know what Buddha said? He's telling, Game aranye sukha dukkha putto neva attano no parang daheta. So you may be going to a village, you may be going to a city, and you may experience sukha or dukkha, either happiness or unhappiness, either pleasurable things or painful things. Neva attano no parang daheta. And don't feel that there is I here. And don't think that they are doing. So when you are attributing it to a person, then you are going to suffer. So that is one advice. So you may be going to a village and someone is blaming. And if you are telling, if you think that he is blaming to me, then you are going to suffer. Pusanti passa upading paticca. Now the upadi term is there. Pusanti passa upading paticca nirupading kena puseyum passa. So all these contacts are coming only when you have so many acquisitions, you have so many claims, you are identifying with so many things. Nirupading kena puseyum passa. If you have no such claims, if you have no such identifications, if you have no such acquisitions, then how such external contacts going to contact? Say, as I explained, so what Buddha says here is, so if you feel that you are a monk and someone is blaming you as a bald-headed person, and if you claim that you are a monk and you are too attached to that figure, you are going to suffer. But if you think, okay, this is just the body, so he is just blaming, those are simply words, some sounds. Nothing happens. So sounds are coming, ears here in the eardrum, and it is going away. So you are not going for a story out of that. Say you are simply walking in the street, someone is simply blaming you. You are a so and so. I don't need to tell the words. So, but if you are not really that, then you don't need to suffer. You simply understand, oh, he's a mad person and he has gone out of his senses. So you simply understand something and then you are not going to suffer. But if you are going to claim, if you are going to identify that I am so and so, I have this status, I have that status, he has to recognize this, he has to respect this, he has to respect that, he has to recognize me, so I have these things, then you are going to suffer. So that is why Buddha is telling, if there are no such kind of identifications, there are no such kind of upadhi, then you are not going to suffer. So therefore, this upadhi is a fairly advanced or fairly subtle state that we need to understand. Even though mind is able to maintain this sort of a peaceful state, which Buddha explained in the previous state, we are satchang anurakheya, where one has to preserve the truth, while even maintaining there, if someone is blaming, your mind again go and attach, or your mind get again irritated, because still you are maintaining some kind of a figure, still you are maintaining some sort of a status, still you are maintaining some sort of a designation, identification, still you are going to suffer. So what is the practice then? So while you are maintaining that, suppose allow things, when as you are moving forward, things are happening as usual, and again you need to understand how suffering arises. Like Buddha explained there, dukkhasa jati pabhava anupassi. So while you are maintaining this peaceful state, why again stress arises? Why again mind become tensed? So there you understand, okay, I am claiming to something. Still I am identifying with something. Still I am possessing something. Still I am maintaining some sort of mental burden. So you have to introspect and feel it. You have to introspect and understand it. And that, at that very moment, you simply release that. You simply relinquish that. That is where the relinquishment. That is where Buddha says, Chagadittano, the foundation of relinquishment. And there you have to cultivate. So that state one has to cultivate. So again and again, your mind becomes stressful and you understand why it is become stressed. What is the root? There may be subtle attachment, subtle claiming, subtle possession, subtle mentally possessing something. And that is the root, that is the cause, and that you have to relinquish. So therefore, the arahat who has completely done this process is called nirupadhi, who has done the job, who has completely relinquished all these acquisitions. He may has his own possessions, he may have his robes, he may have his ball, he may have his monastery, whatever thing, but he is not mentally attached to them. He is not carrying them as a mental burden. He has become completely relinquished of this burden. And again, Buddha says in this Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, Tasma evan samannagato bhikkhu, ඉමිනා පරමේන ඡාගාදිඨානේන සමන්නාගතෝ හෝති. If someone understand this process, one understand that one has to develop this sort of relinquishment, then Buddha says he is possessing the supreme foundation of relinquishment. Eso hi bhikkhu paramo ariyo chago yadidang sabbupadi patinissaggo. So this is the extreme, or this is the supreme noble relinquishment, namely relinquishment of all acquisitions. You know, the Nibbana is termed as sabbupadi patinissagga. There's a very beautiful phrase explaining the qualities of the Nibbana. Etam santam etam panitam yadidam sabba sankhara samato sabbupadi patinissaggo tanhakkayo virago nirodho nibbana. So the term sabbupadi patinissagga is there. So if we are, say, for someone become an arahant, so his mentality or his mind is utterly free from all acquisitions. So it is sabbupadi patinissagga, the all these sort of acquisitions, all these of claiming, all these sort of identifications are all relinquished. He has fulfilled all the relinquishments. So as Venerable Achan Cha has mentioned, he has completely relinquished, completely let go of, so he have the complete peace, complete happiness. So with that note, I'll conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Thank you very much for listening. So today we have a special sharing of merits. You might have heard that Mrs. Devika Jayavardhana has gone through sort of a operation, and now she is going through chemotherapy. And she is actually a friend for many of the yogis, and she is actually conducting retreats as a retreat organizer in Mithirigala, as well as she's helping here in Kalalgoda. So we share all these merits what we have acquired today and yesterday to her, wishing her good health, and all the medicine and all the medical advisors come to the favor of her, and maybe free from suffering, maybe find cure, and maybe become well, and would be able to come back to Kalalgoda, come back to Mithirigala, and be with us as a practitioner. So, and again, we can share some merits, and again, radiate some metta towards her. So, all the merits we acquire so far, may she receive these merits, and may she also rejoice in whatever the good things she has done, and let these merits help her to ultimately attain path Roshan Nibbana. So we'll take this opportunity to share the merits with all the past away relatives, all the celestial beings, all the beings who are in need of merits. Similarly, we'll wish that all these merits help us also to relinquish all acquisitions and to attain path Roshan Nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, we'll recite the traditional verses. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Akasattha cha bummatta deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha cha bummatta deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Sattha cha bummatta deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mam param. Idam vo nyatenam hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatenam hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatenam hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා. ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා. ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා. සාදු සාදු සාදු.